Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. So really sad that Bob Saget passed away. He was a friend, really, really funny guy. But even more important than that, he was just a really great guy. He treated everybody so well, such a nice guy. And he was on the show. We had a great conversation a while back, and I wanted to put the conversation out again. He was really funny in this interview, and I just wanted to pay tribute to him. It's still such a shock that he's gone. So if you've heard this before, check it out again. He's great in it. And if you haven't heard it before, I think you're really going to enjoy it. So this is our tribute to Bob Saget, and our thoughts are with him and his family.
I'm talking to Bob Saget, by the way, everybody. I don't have a traditional start to my show. A great comedian. I obviously know him from Full House and other great shows, and just a great stand-up, a Comedy Central roast, and has a new series coming out tomorrow, March 12th, Videos After Dark, which is sort of an edgier, darker America's Funniest Home Videos. And it's great to have you on, man. We've met a few times and hung out. We were just talking about, but it's great to talk to you and have you on the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's mutual. I never thought I'd be doing promoing a new video show ever. If you'd have told me that 10 years ago, I'd go, you got to be kidding me.
Were you running from that a little bit? Because John Fugelsang's a buddy of mine, and he hosted it, and he had a good time, but he said it took a few years to get that kind of hosting role off of him so he could be seen for other things. Did you have the same issue? Not that it was a great gig and you were great at it, but you know, there's the business tends to pigeonhole people.
I mean, people thought that I acted like Danny Tanner in my real life. They didn't understand that people act when they're on a show. And as far as the video show went, I was 30 years old, you know, I was a snarky guy, and I would try to use sarcasm to replace what would be my normal sense of humor. Which would be, I don't know, it wasn't like I was some filth bag. It was just that I wanted to not feel censored and all that. But it was a good job, and it was not what I expected it to be. I did it for 8 years, and it was on Sunday nights, and that people go to church all day. And so you're dealing with, you know, real people all over the world. The show was seen all over the world. And then I got this call just like 5 months ago from Vin DeBona, who made that show, who was my producer on that show, and said, okay, you can do whatever you want. And I want you to do this because I've been wanting to make this show. And a guy named Rob Mills at ABC, who is in charge of Alternative, which would be Jimmy Kimmel, and it would be even The Bachelor and shows like that. But I don't think he can go Kimmel and The Bachelor, but you know, he just said you can have control. So I'm one of the exec producers, a head writer. And so it's really my stand-up, kind of. I'm reading prompter, but you know the world you come from. You come from Colbert, right? I mean, it's a world
show,
of, you read prompter, you go off of prompter, you come back to prompter. And so that's something that's incredibly fun for me, is that freedom. And then it's videos. It's like a variety show where videos are the talent. And so we've seen everything. Everything's gone viral. So people are sending you got to see this YouTube video. And since I did that video show, I don't ever want to see a video from someone, you know. And a bunch of my friends are always posting videos of things happening, and radio stations are always posting people falling down and everything falling apart. And, but this thing is really funny to me. It's just a lot of the videos are just stuff he's sat on for 30 years. And, you know, it's like a section of videotapes in your dad's sock drawer, and there's naked people with their asses are blurred, and babies are cursing, and they'll put a birdie over their mouth, but you know what they're saying. And it's just hilarious to see a 2-year-old cursing and not knowing what they're saying, but by the parents laughing, they're encouraging it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it breaks it down into, and these are things that would have been on another show, but it still goes into, you peek into people's lives, but then you get a 5-minute bunch of stripper videos where all they do is fall off of poles to a Ramones song. And I hate to say it, but it's funny. And you know, I don't hate to say it. Actually, with all the stuff that's on, and you have the alternative is the news, you know, this is at 10 o'clock at night. We're not into our late night shows yet, which are a solace a lot of times. And yeah, they're dealing with politics a lot of times, but they're still also just wanting to entertain people by mocking what happened in the day's events. But this is evergreen, and this is just, it's just funny stuff to see a very large man sliding down a hill of ice and his bathing suit's on and it comes off and he just keeps hitting like little icebergs and he's like whittling it down, you know? And then he stands up and goes, ta-da!
He's got a sense of humor about himself. So
exactly. Feels, so it's not just making fun of people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not just saying, look at these people in the South setting fire to their home. That's in there too. or here are Russian guys with tasers, tasering themselves to out-taser their friend.
That's hilarious. Vin is from my hometown in Cranston, Rhode Island, actually. Fellow Rhode Island boy. And I know you've been working with him a long time.
Yeah.
I know you were writing, I think, with two Canadian writers, all of your words and prompter, and also you were doing the sort of the voiceover for the videos.
Yeah, and now all those voiceovers are back. And so I've got my same little cast of wannabe Mel Blanc voices, you know.
That's great.
Look out, you know. But exactly. They're saying things like, you know, don't hurt my willy, you know. It's like, it's funny.
Do you think now this could get on? I mean, I imagine a bunch of these are things that Vin got or you guys got, and they were too blue for, you know, the primetime show that you were doing. And now that this show can exist because of social media and the internet, and it's, people are seeing so much stuff that the rules are a little more lax with the networks now. And
they are and they're not. I mean, there are certain types of videos that the network won't let on because it's just, you know, they're still getting over the NYPD blue showing nudity years ago. You know, there are, and we're talking about a company that it's Disney. So but they are allowing things that late night television allows, which is there's certain words you can say. You can say pissed off and not get in trouble. And there really isn't a need to say it usually on my show. But I'm able to say stuff that's, I'm able to prove the point of doing what people would groan at me in the old day and call it a dad joke. Yeah. But then I say it again and add the word penis and it gets a giant laugh. And then I say, so you're laughing basically just that I said that word, you know, and then it's shame on you people. So it's a complete flip of whatever that character I was playing as a youngster at 30 hosting that show for 8 years. And I never thought I'd be doing a video show, but I have full reign. I mean, I'm able to, if people like it, I get to play. And that's, and it's really a skill, as crazy as that sounds, to look at a video and make a whole story that doesn't exist with voiceovers. And you, so you got to write jokes to these videos. So you're basically, you're dubbing a movie is what you're doing. And it's a fun thing to try to figure out the puzzle of that.
You know, I give everybody credit because when I was reading through the information about the show and everything for the interview, and it said videos after dark, and I just assumed this was going to be like super late night or on like HBO or Showtime, and it's on 10 o'clock on ABC tomorrow night after the conclusion of The Bachelor. It's like that's pretty out there. Like we were saying, 15 years ago, I don't know any of these networks, you know, obviously this isn't like porn that you're showing, but still it's edgy stuff. For 10 o'clock at night, I was really in a good way surprised by that, you know?
Yeah, it's a strong move. And it's this guy, Rob Mills, he really fought for the show, believes in it. And that is something you don't have that often. You know, the shows that you watch, that I watch, that you love, that you go, my God, I don't know if you're a Game of Thrones fan. Are you?
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that coming back.
And, absolutely.
And I think HBO is probably, you know, having to sell a building to finish paying for them. I talked to those producers one night, and they're going, "No, we're not the best show. The Sopranos was the best show." And I'm going, "Well, I was on Full House, and now I'm on Fuller House, and that's on Netflix. That's
there you go.
Last season. You want to know what happens? Because I don't. I don't know what's going to happen. But I'm happy to do family stuff. But I'm also, I directed this movie called Benjamin, and it's coming out in a couple months. And I maybe I'll try to hit you up and see if you can Yeah, talk to you again.
Absolutely.
It's Rob Corddry and Kevin Pollak and Dave Foley.
No, Rob's a buddy of mine. We worked together on The Daily Show.
I love him so much. And yeah, he did me such a solid. And he played such a cool character. We think my son is on drugs. And Rob is a family gynecologist, and he's the only doctor. So we make him lead the intervention on my son.
Even when he was doing his persona on the Daily Show, there's this little psycho glint in his eye. Like, he's got that smile and almost the everyman, but then, like, you feel like he could snap at any moment. Like, there's this, I don't know, it's just so funny the way he plays stuff.
He's hilarious, and he is such a skilled actor. He's really incredibly on point. And
yeah,
he really helped keep me together because I was directing and acting in it and playing somebody who was out of his mind. So it's not Noel Coward, but it's definitely a hardcore dark comedy. And you know, I just want to do good work. And this show, I actually believe, is good work. I think it's, people would watch it over a lot of other things. For one thing, if you're into your serial and you need to have your show and see what happened to your characters that week, then, you know, that's another thing. And I understand that, but this is a show that's, you could put it on at any point and go, oh my God, I got to see what I missed before. Cause there's not a miss in the first episode. It's,
which is also important now because people aren't watching television the way that we did 15 years ago. People are DVRing it or watching it on their phone or pulling, you know what I mean? So this is a perfect show for that because I mean, there's no such thing as appointment television really anymore, right? Like, you got to see it tonight. Like, it's funny because I had Norman Lear on and he was talking
He's a friend of mine. He teaches me who I am.
Oh.
He's one of the best people on this earth. He's a dear friend. He's Obi-Wan Kenobi, isn't he?
Yeah. And he was telling me about, and he probably, if you guys are good friends, he maybe told you this, but my listeners who don't know, he was talking about the heyday, and I was just saying how brave he was and CBS was for putting that kind of content on, and it wouldn't happen today, especially on broadcast networks. And he talked about, like, at the height of the show, they had one particular show that was a special show, and they were like, they averaged like 60 million viewers in the New York metropolitan area, and he said during commercial breaks the water table would change because everybody would go to the bathroom and flush the toilets. And it's like, it just blows your mind.
You don't need a Nielsen box or a diary at that time.
Exactly.
I snuck into All the Family. I watched two of them being filmed, and
I wanted to ask you about that because I was watching you, and I you talked about you snuck into Mary Tyler Moore show and the Bob Newhart show.
Yeah.
So what did you take, because I also wanted to talk to you about your Comedy Store days and how, you know, you hosted for 8 years and you were working with Richard Pryor and Robin Williams. And it's like, I think if you're, and I'm going to sound like a pompous ass, but like if you're an artist in some way, and I think what we do is art, like, so you absorbing, you know, just like painters absorb from each other. Like, so it's like kind of a two-part question, but like when you will go to those sitcoms, looking back now, were there things that you kind of absorbed that you took with you when you were performing on Full House or in your acting in general?
Well, yeah, it part of it had to do with just the way a studio audience is done and how they're kind of watching a play. And I'd been on a couple of good shows as a guest. And then, you know, Full House was shot it took a long time to shoot. It had a lot of kids on it. And the cast was huge. It was like 62 people or something. Mm. But it was, you learned certain things by watching that, but the level of writing of All in the Family, you know, it's matched mostly by cable shows. Mm. And the level of performance, you're almost watching a play. I mean, it took an hour and 20 minutes for them to shoot an episode. Writers didn't come around with clipboards and their notebooks, whereas like Mary Tyler Moore show, James L. Brooks and the writing staff would all surround them after a scene and give them notes and dissect it. It didn't make it any less a great show, but there's something to be said for how All in the Family was done.
Mm-hmm.
And there was only one way to do it, and it was done by a genius. And
yeah, absolutely. And on average, so I mean, some listeners who don't know the inside of the business, so on average, a Full House episode. I mean, generally sitcoms can take up to 4 or 5 hours to shoot, even though you're shooting a half hour because of what you just said. A lot of starts and stops and that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
And rewrites on the floor in the moment, right?
And a lot of times the audience would leave. I mean, people over at Friends or Cheers, you know, after 8 hours of meticulous joke honing, yeah. And then, you know, getting it right, getting everything they wanted, figuring out why this joke doesn't work. Norman's attitude, and it's interesting because last night when I was at a couple nights ago, I've lost track of everything because it's so early, and I'm a tired man. John Wells, this great writer, does Shameless for 9 years, and then did ER and did West Wing, so he really is another patriarch and great writer, showrunner, and understands the whole process. Their scripts are finished when they go and shoot these shows. And yes, they're single camera shows. Not rarely they use two cameras so they can get it done. But in the way that they do these shows, they have the script. They're done. And All in the Family was done. If any changes were to be made, there were a slight tweak. And a lot of these other shows, they would always be tabled by 12 writers. And then they would just keep fixing them while they were doing them. If something didn't play in front of the audience, and there's still classic television that came out of that. And Full House was no exception. You know, kids would be waiting on the couch while writers were trying to figure out how to fix a joke, you know?
Right, right.
So it all is basically, there's only so many ways to cut an apple when it comes to that. But doing this show, this video thing is, you know, it's just, and I'm out on tour hardcore doing my stand-up. I'm in New York a lot too. So if you want to come to a show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm in April. I'm at, I'm at the PlayStation Theater, which is in Times Square, and that'll be on, when is that? That's April 13th, and I'm in Red Bank, the Count Basie Theater. You ever been there?
No, it must be, is it beautiful?
It's pretty. It's really pretty. Yeah. It's the 11th.
Okay, April 11th,
Huntington,
April 13th.
Huntington, New York, is that far?
That's on Long Island. That's like an hour and a half.
Yeah, I'm at the Paramount there, so that'll be all in April and stuff. So if you want to come to a show, look at my thing and then hit my guy.
Yeah, absolutely. The PlayStation Theater is just down the street from the Late Show with Colbert. Times Square. So
do you work over at Colbert?
Do the warm up over there. And I used to write on the Daily Show.
Did I meet you? Because I've been on the show. I was there with
I think we have, you know, usually I kind of, if you know, don't go bother the guests too much, but and we've met at a couple of clubs too. I think it's one of those like kind of you just run into each other and like, you know, like we were saying at Chappelle's,
right.
And did you know the days of when you were a young comic and you were working at the Comedy Store, you know, you had won a Student Academy Award for a film you did. You went to LA and you performed in Mitzi, the owner of the store at the time, past you, and you started working. And I always get asked this question by people who aren't in the industry, like, who's your favorite comic? And my answer is, I don't have a favorite. I like different ones for different reasons, you know?
Yeah.
Like the precision of Rodney Dangerfield in his writing and delivery, you know, just the Jonathan Winters and Robin Williams for their just fast mind improvisation, you know, Carlin for his point of view, same with Pryor and stuff. So you're working with literally all of these greats that I just mentioned, and then some, Andy Kaufman, Letterman. Were you sort of absorbing different things from, not consciously going, okay, I'm going to do this kind of thing that Pryor does and this kind of thing that Robin Williams does, but like, did you find, maybe looking back, that it helped develop you and your point of view, or did you absorb anything from these different people? And if so, what?
Well, I didn't want to do what some comics do, which is absorb people's style, and all of a sudden they're doing that comedian, and that leads ultimately to nowhere.
Yeah.
But then when everybody has their own thing, that's why I've never loved the lineups of comedians. You know, it's like, oh no, I'm going to do a joke, and it'll end up in a writer's room somewhere that someone's working, and it's happened to me recently. You know, a few times some of my jokes are all of a sudden for my last special on. Watching a talk show and I hear my joke, then I go, wait a minute, that I don't think two minds could have thought of that. I don't think, but maybe they
really
did.
Really,
yeah, it's weird. It's happened a few times, you know, but that's, you know, one of the greatest things about coming up at the Comedy Store besides the fact that it was a dark place in a very strange place. and Mitzi could either love you or hate you and treat you good or treat you horrible.
Yeah.
And she was good to me and started me off. And then one day told me I wasn't funny anymore. And that's always good for a 26-year-old to hear.
Yeah, I know. Trust me, there's a couple of people who run clubs to this day that are like that. And, you know, I think it's all about them and their own insecurity. And I always say power in the wrong hands. I mean, obviously Hitler, but power in the wrong hands by people who don't know how to use it is a bad thing. And generally people who abuse it, I think, in this business, in those positions, are people that never had it and they're insecure. And so it fuels their own sense of self that they can manipulate people. It's you got to have a tough constitution, a tough skin.
And that's always going to be around, but people are a little bit more in check right now because everybody's getting hit with, you know, how they're treating people.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Which makes it not the worst time. It's because people, you know, I can't help but think that we're going to fall upward somehow. That it's not, we're not going to continue a McCarthyism kind of way of.
Well, the whole society, I think social media has empowered everybody to have a point of view and opinion all the time and say it. And my attitude is just because you have an opinion, keep your fucking mouth shut, including me. We don't have to hear it all the time. And
right.
I was at Stand Up New York here in the city one night, just working out new material. And there was kind of a dead audience. And I was like, well, I don't want to waste this new material if they're not really laughing. So let me talk to them a little bit, kind of juice them and get them. So I'm talking to this couple in the back, and it's like a married couple. I don't know. They're in their 50s or whatever. And the guy's answering all the questions, just like standard, like get to know them kind of stuff. And then I said, how long have you been married? And the woman goes, 25 years. And the way she said it, it was funny. And everybody laughed. And then I go, oh, that was funny. And then this other woman who was like 28 or not 29 goes, what, a woman can't speak in public? And I'm like, what? And she goes, well, you laughed at the woman. I go, well, it was kind of funny the way she said, well, only men can speak. And then the whole crowd's like, oh, come on, lady. And it was very clear, like she had this agenda. And I said, look, we're going to do one of two things here. I said, you can either just go out to the bar. There's a window and I'll be done in 15 minutes and I'll get off and you can come back in or you can sit there and shut the fuck up. I said, but you can't. I said, you need to have a march. You need to go get a permit and have a march or get a petition because you're putting your own stuff onto something that didn't happen. And that's happening a lot. Like not just in comedy clubs, but in general in life, people seem to have their antenna up for controversy when there is none, you know?
Yeah. It's exactly the problem. Exactly the problem. And it's also everybody wants to have a voice. And that's why you don't even know if the people that are complaining are valid or if things happen to them that they're claiming happened, but then, you know, certain other people, I mean, people are going to jail because they are admitting something on Twitter. And then they're saying, well, yeah, I did it. And some of them are not having a career anymore and don't go to jail. And some of them go to jail because accusers have a case and it's real. And then we find out all this stuff. It's not real. That's a hoax that these people are. So it's not the most positive time that we're seeing right now.
No, not at
all.
So
going out and doing stand up for me is so important to me, and I've just attacked this tour. It's really interesting, and I want to have new stuff, and I want the stuff to be funny. But I'm also getting into social relevance and things. When I was 5 years old, there was, you know, the segregated bathrooms, and I didn't know what they were. And so that's a 10-minute thing to talk about.
And that's sort of newer territory for you, like the more social commentary stuff,
yeah,
right?
But it has a punchline. I'm able to weave things around, and so I'm still able to turn it somehow into a penis joke. And that's, it's odd that it's, the heart is there. And I guess I would say I'm copying to Richard on Pryor on that, because that's what he would do. He would go really dark and talk about really dark stuff and then come out of it with something that you didn't expect. And that's sometimes my favorite stuff, when it gets really quiet and then it
kind of sneaks up on you, kind of thing.
Yeah. And then there's a burst of relief that comedy exists. And then there's a bunch of people that aren't funny. But now I'm watching, like, Colbert is so in the zone now. It's, like, so interesting to watch. He's, you know, it's like from when he started, and everybody goes, well, God, he's so much better. And I'm like, what are you talking about? first thing is he was masterful on his old show. Next thing, he's in the Ed Sullivan Theater taking over for one of the biggest people that ever hosted a show. The boots don't get put on that quick.
No, and also by a guy that wasn't a stand-up. And you and I, as stand-ups, know it's a very specific skill set, and the art of it is to make it look like, oh, just anybody could walk up there, put their hands in their pocket, and chit-chat. But it's there's a lot going on up there. And he was not a stand-up. He's a comedic actor, an improv guy out of Second City. And so we were doing run-throughs before the show went on the air of just him being comfortable standing on the stage and playing to the room. And then, you know, we did some test shows or whatever. And then, you know, I take some notes and we get together and, you know, like there's the balcony, right? And I'm like, you got to look up at the balcony because you don't have to deliver the joke there. But if you just gaze up, it engages all of those people in the balcony. Otherwise, if you're just looking down at the orchestra seats, they get disengaged emotionally. All of those little things. And he just grabbed it like within a couple of weeks and just owned it. And
yeah, well, you know, he's brilliant. I mean, he really,
is. And it's funny, you know, I don't think, I don't want to speak for him directly, but I don't think the plan was to do all politics in the show. It was like, you know, kind of between the Daily Show and the Colbert Report, you know, him and a bunch of us have been doing it a long time. And I think it was going to be more like a traditional general variety late night show. You touch a little bit on politics like Johnny used to, but then like, you know, other stuff as well. But then all this stuff, you know, with the current administration was like meat falling from the sky every day. Like, how do you not do it? And so if you tracked the monologue in a way, you'd see it started with maybe 10% of politics and then 20 and then 30, then 50 and then almost 100% because that's it right now. That's the conversation in the country. So
yeah, you go through the minutes of the day and that's the joke. But they've
also
been doing some really strong pieces. They did a funny Game of Thrones bit, which was a really funny thing recently. You know which one I mean?
Yeah.
It was just hilarious. And it's you know, it obviously comes from what people would call more a leftish way of looking at it, but it's not. It's just, it's a humanistic way of looking at it, of how people are behaving and how people are treating other people.
Yeah, I know. The problem in the culture, though, is like you can't have great, like I go on and I can, you know, between, like I said, working on the shows or going on, you know, some of these panel shows on cable news, like nobody has a sense of humor about their candidate anymore or their politics. So like you can't, it's very hard to do fun political satire without half the room, you know, getting really upset or whatever. And
yeah,
I think you alluded to it earlier. Like, I hope the pendulum swings back a little bit and everybody can lighten up and acknowledge
well,
that.
Well, I think they're going to have to get tired of it or there's going to be a lot of hell to pay. You know, we don't want to see a war, you know,
exactly.
A guy yelling out the South arise again and I'm playing Boston, you know, it's like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. Well, listen, I don't want to keep you too long. I want to have you back on. We'll figure out another
time. Yeah, I want to come in maybe when I'm in New York. Do you put people in there with you?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a studio over at the CBS studios. We can get you in and we'll hang out. We'd love to do it face-to-face.
Great. I'll talk
to
my guy.
Let me do this. Let me tell people March 12th, tomorrow night, Videos After Dark, Bob Saget. You have your Benjamin. When is your movie coming out?
I believe it's April, but I have to announce that's when I'll torture you because I'll be in New York City. So I'll come talk to you about that. And
then
I'm
you got
really
tour dates in April, PlayStation Theater, Red Bank, the Paramount. They can go to your website, I guess, or go to those websites.
BobSaget.com. I don't know how I came up with it.
Did you focus group it and all that
other
stuff?
Yeah, we did. We tested it. I feel bad for the people that have to go. The real, you know.
Yeah, in .net, .org.
Yeah, genuine. You know,
trust me, I've come close to shooting somebody when they put that dash or that underscore in their emails.
Oh my God. Why is that in the middle of their name?
Really? You just come up with a name, Daisy or something. I don't know.
Right.
And by the way, don't hang up when I say bye to everybody because I want to ask you something off the air. But you can see how professional this show is. I don't like it to feel like a show. But anyway, go see Bob in April on tour and watch his show tomorrow night. This man has not made much money in the business and he needs every nickel he can get.
I got three daughters and a wife to pay for.
Oh, God. Hey, it's great to finally talk to you like this. Like I said, we've hung out a bit here and there, so it's really great. I just look
yeah,
very excited.
Yeah, I'm really happy. I enjoyed this a lot. Thank you.
All right, thanks, man. Have a good day. Bob Saget, everybody. Check out his show tomorrow night, Videos After Dark on ABC at 10 p.m. Eastern.
Thanks, man.
Now, there you go. That's Bob Saget. So sad that he's gone. Hope you enjoyed that conversation, and we'll see you next week, everybody.